Have you ever noticed how some people seem to carry the weight of generations in their posture? In a culture that demands Black Americans be both invisible and exceptional, twice as good yet half as threatening, vulnerability isn't just difficult, it's dangerous. This anthology emerges from a crucial conversation between Tarana Burke, founder of the Me Too movement, and vulnerability researcher Brené Brown, who recognized that existing frameworks for understanding shame and openness had overlooked a critical reality. When your very existence is politicized, being vulnerable can cost you everything. Through essays from artists, activists, writers, and everyday people, this collection explores what it means to reclaim wholeness in a society built on denying Black humanity. Imagine learning as a child that showing fear could get you killed, that crying might confirm stereotypes weaponized against your community, that asking for help could signal weakness in a world already seeking reasons to diminish you. Burke explains how Black Americans have been forced to armor themselves across generations, not by choice, but necessity. The lineage runs deep, from enslaved ancestors who learned that displaying emotion invited brutal punishment, to contemporary Black parents coaching children on surviving police encounters. This armor gets passed down like an heirloom. Parents who survived by appearing strong teach their children the same strategies, often without explaining why. The result? Generations disconnected from their emotional landscapes, unable to name their pain even in safe spaces. This necessary protection exacts a toll. Difficulty forming intimate connections, chronic stress manifesting as physical illness, and a persistent sense of performing rather than simply existing. The conversation illuminates how mainstream vulnerability discussions assume a safety many Black Americans never experience. When Brown discusses the courage to be imperfect, Burke asks, what happens when imperfection confirms biases that could cost you a job, your freedom, or your life? It's the Black woman who can't show frustration without being labeled angry, the Black man who can't express sadness without his masculinity questioned, the Black child who learns that being too loud invites punishment. Jason Reynolds shares a haunting story, leaving his mother's hospital bedside to sign his first publishing contract. Shame consumed him, until her response cut through. Why be ashamed of what you've atoned for? This reveals how Black families navigate impossible choices between survival and connection, the weight of being your family's way out while feeling you've abandoned those who sacrificed for you. Kisei Makeba-Lehman explores his oversized head, the body part that couldn't naturally exit his mother's body, that helped him fly underneath the dirt of Mississippi, yet receives punishment rather than care. His essay weaves childhood injuries, academic achievements, and chronic pain into a meditation on survival. He needs medical help, but fears white doctors will kill him. Not paranoia, but reasonable assessment based on documented medical racism. Tanya Denise Fields describes her journey through shame about her dark skin and life choices. Colorism within her own community left wounds that took decades to heal. Through West African spirituality, therapy, and Black feminist ideology, she labored and rebirthed herself after surviving domestic violence. Her declaration that joy is my birthright rather than something earned represents a radical rejection of shame's grip. Austin Channing Brown watches her toddler son in a hoodie and sees Trayvon Martin, that gut punch moment when parental love collides with racial reality. She examines foreboding joy, the inability to fully embrace happiness because history has taught Black Americans that good things get taken away. This isn't general anxiety, it's evidence-based fear rooted in pandemic statistics showing disproportionate Black deaths and countless families receiving devastating calls about police violence. Yet here's the revolutionary part. Despite this precarity, Black joy persists. It shows up in Sunday dinners where generations gather, in uninhibited dance parties, in garden plots tended with seeds passed down through families. Brown emphasizes this joy isn't naive, it's defiant. The phrase, this joy I have, the world didn't give it to me, and the world can't take it away, becomes both shield and sword. This paradox threads throughout the anthology. Contributors celebrate graduations while knowing degrees won't protect them from discrimination. They fall in love knowing their relationships will face racist scrutiny. They create art that institutions built on exclusion might never value. Black joy isn't simply happiness, it's resistance, a reclamation of humanity in a society that systematically denies it. When Brown chooses to love her son harder, to become softer rather than more armored, she's making a political statement. My joy in him cannot be taken away. Several male contributors confront how traditional masculinity has constrained their emotional lives. Growing up in volatile households where violence could erupt unpredictably, they learned that business had to stay in the family, a rule about both decorum and safety. Media offered few alternatives. Even positive black father figures on shows like The Cosby Show and Fresh Prince were portrayed as stern disciplinarians or absent figures, rarely showing tenderness. The result? Black men modeling manhood after those who oppress them, measuring their humanity against those who seek to kill them. One contributor writes about swallowing poison, venerating screaming coaches, bonding through violent fraternity rituals, romanticizing rage. These patterns begin early, with young boys learning to suppress tears and channel all emotions into acceptable forms of anger. The journey toward vulnerability requires running toward fear. Professional vulnerability asks what jobs they're willing to lose in environments expecting black men to be twice as tough. Social vulnerability asks what networks they'll sacrifice in communities equating emotional openness with weakness. The true test comes in private moments, choosing gentle words over harsh ones, expressing hurt instead of anger, showing tenderness rather than toughness. Despite ongoing struggles, contributors describe feeling more emotionally expressive and free than ever before. The anthology frames self-love as revolutionary in a society built on devaluing black life. Aiko DiPatheya describes being the only black child bused to a white school, learning about blackness in relation to whiteness. Even wealthy, educated black women face white supremacist stereotypes. Poor, uneducated, promiscuous, loud. We enter every room at a deficit. When deemed unacceptable, people respond four ways: assimilate for acceptance, fight fire with fire, hide under the radar, or live wholeheartedly. The first three require armoring up. Assimilation means using credentials and beauty, mimicking white features as protection. Fighting fire with fire means rejecting respectability with toughness. Hiding means playing small. Darren Young explains that racial trauma makes us feel trapped in our skin, suffocating on daily shame. We armor up to function, creating steel cages that reduce our capacity for connection. But we can't heal if we pretend we aren't hurting. Yolo Akili Robinson concludes that through white supremacy's lens, being black is shame itself. Shame has been a central organizing force in black communities, motivating through fear rather than love. The message rings clear. Shame is not your name. There is nothing wrong with us at our core. In a world profiting from black self-hatred, choosing to embrace your full, vulnerable, joyful humanity becomes the most radical act of all.